announcement hoping that if you wish to be the time crew, so that's your karma. So Rinpoche is not well, so he asked me to teach path and ground. So maybe we have one common thing with Rinpoche, maybe our English accent is the same. But there's a benefit, really. So we meet, there's a benefit. So as my eyesight is very poor, so if you get bored, even if you leave in the middle of the teaching time, I won't see you. So, just relax. So when I went to see Rinpoche this morning for the meditation, and at that time I was well. And Rinpoche was not that well. So then he started thinking about the Geshe, some Lama, asking to teach something, you know? Then I started to feel the distinctness. Because I knew he was going to ask me to translate. So I said, so because what's going on, what to ask, maybe that answer. So I've been translating for so long, I'm not translating. So Rinpoche says, okay, no problem. So I felt a little bit better. I'm still a little bit sick. So Rinpoche said, okay, teach salam. You can teach salam. Ground and path. The ground and path lead into Buddhahood. You know? So first we have to give a background, so we can just start with path and ground. And so most of you may have heard already these teachings. So as you may know the Mahayana, the so-called Mahayana, comes from the present paramita. Maybe next slide. The preparation for next slide. So, as I say that, so the Prajna Paramita is the source of Lambre, the source of Lambre, yes, and Mahayana. So the Prajna Paramita, the Prajna Paramita, it teaches both, the method and wisdom. So when you talk about Buddhahood, Buddhahood, when you talk about Buddhahood, it means two things, the Buddha's mind, and the Buddha's body. So one is to achieve these two things. One is to achieve the enlightenment. Enlightenment is to achieve the Rupakaya, Dharmakaya, the wisdom body, the form body. So in order to do that, one is to accumulate, to collect the three accumulation of wisdom and accumulation of method. And these two are taught, in the Prajna Paramita. The wisdom explicitly taught in the Prajna Paramita, and the method is implicitly taught. So the Prajna Paramita, which became the source of the origin, the source of Mahayana, it teaches to achieve Buddhahood. To achieve Buddhahood, one must achieve Buddhahood means to remove the two obscuration to liberation, the affliction, and obscuration to omniscience. So it is said that, so according to the Mahayanists, the middle way school, it is the wisdom taught in the Prajna Paramita that one needs to understand, is to realize. So explicitly, the Prajna Paramita teach the type of wisdom, the wisdom that Supreme Buddha is Buddha, the wisdom that the wisdom of relativity, everything is relative. And so relative means everything depends. So because everything depends, it's relative. And so nothing inherently exists, from the deepest of hell to Buddhahood. Everything is empty of inherent existence. And that was kind of a revolution when the Prajna Paramita appeared. This view of relativity, the fact that not inherently exists, not even Buddha is Buddha, that is a very Buddha nature. With a Buddha nature in the sense, since everything depends, everything is relative, everything is possible. So it is possible to be born in hell, and so it's possible to be achieve Buddha, Buddha equal. So we both have the potentiality either to be born, you know, in the hell or to achieve Buddha. It depends. Depends, you know, depends what condition we encounter, we meet. So the Prajna Paramita explicitly it teaches that relative, only short. And implicitly it teaches the method, so the various stages of the path leading to Buddhahood. And from within these stages of the path, from the various commentary. So there are various commentary commenting the so-called explicit meaning of Prajna Paramita, that is the various commentary of Nagarjuna, and then his followers, and the implicit meaning, which became the commentary on the implicit meaning of Prajna Paramita, became the very source of the Lambrin, the stage of the path to enlightenment. So Lambrin, or the very stage of the path to enlightenment, is nothing else than the Prajna Paramita, the commentary on the implicit meaning of Prajna Paramita, is Prajna Paramita. So therefore in these two, in the Prajna Paramita text, these two things are taught. So, method and wisdom. So the so-called method, you know, or call sometimes the two bodhicitta, the absolute bodhicitta and the relative bodhicitta. So, in order to achieve perfect enlightenment, one must first to generate the so-called mind of enlightenment, the wish to achieve perfect enlightenment, for example, to something makes. So this, here when we talk about sentient beings, it's not just human beings, there are infinite sentient beings, without limit. Infinite sentient beings, infinite realms. So as his Honest Dalai Lama mentioned many times, whether or not Buddhahood exists, whether or not Buddhahood is possible, but definitely we can talk of a person who generates the mind, the wish to achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings. We may think that it's strange, we may think that it's weird, we may think that person is a bit strange, but that type of mind could exist. We can see there are people who do, there have been people in the past who have generated that mind, and there are people who do generate that mind. We have a perfect example here, Lamasopa Rinpoche. Lamasopa Rinpoche has that mind. Rinpoche has the mind, the wish to achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, numberless sentient beings. Rinpoche has this wish. Now, whether or not that is possible, okay, that's questionable, yes, no, that is not the point. But such a mind exists. There are people who do generate that mind. And then, if we think about how powerful is that mind, you know, how holy is that mind, how powerful, how holy, how noble is simply to have, you know, I mean simply, it's not a simple thing, to have that type of mind. So, by that, anyway, that is, you know, the cause of Buddha, the root, the cause of Buddha, bodhicitta. They wish to achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. So, therefore, one must. So, it's not a natural thing. It's not that It's not that something that we generate spontaneously. It's not that it comes through blessing. You know, it is what is called a certain process. It is the result of a certain practice. And again, it reflects the view, you know, and say, in terms of Buddhism, one can condense Buddhism two things. In terms of the view, dependent arising, in terms of the practice, you know, loving kindness, compassion, altruism. And it reflects the view. The view is dependent arising. Everything really depends upon cause and condition. So the bodhicitta too, the body mind, it depends upon cause and condition. So, anyway, it is achievable. It's not something that either we are blessed or not. It's not something to be lucky or to be blessed. If the proper cause and condition are gathered together, one will achieve the result. So the result of bodhicitta, bodhicitta, body mind. So traditionally, you know, as you may have heard many times, traditionally they teach there are two lineages. The one is the lineage of the six causes, one effect, which is said to be an easier way of generating this mind. And the more difficult method, the equalizing and exchanging oneself for others. These two methods have been now brought to Tibet by Atisha, the founder. You know, the founder of the mind training teacher, the Kadampa. The originator of the Kadampa teachings. The originator of the Kadampa teaching, Atisha and his various followers and disciples. So, Atisha brought to Tibet these two lineages, which they say one comes from Manjushri and the other one from Maitreya, and respectively from Azanga. Shantideva, Nagarjuna Shantideva, and so forth. So in the six cause and one effect, you know, if you go backwards, first we see the bodhicitta, the body mind, the wish to achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, that has two purposes. May I wish, may I achieve perfect enlightenment, that is a purpose for oneself. The benefit of sentient beings, that is a purpose for others. So, with the thought, may I achieve perfect enlightenment, that is the condition, the cause to achieve the Dharma, the truth body. For the benefit of all sentient beings, one feels the cause to achieve the Rupa Kaya, the form. So there are two purposes, this thought to fulfill two purposes, one's own purpose and the purpose of others. So, to generate this mind, one must really feel that one must do something for the benefit of others. It's not that one simply generates this thought. You must feel that one must do something to benefit others, to help others. That is what we call the superior thought. The three altruistic superior thoughts. But this superior altruistic thought, it doesn't come without compassion. So first one needs compassion. Compassion is the root. Compassion stays, it stands, you know, it dwells in between two things, altruism and loving kindness. Loving kindness precedes compassion, and compassion precedes altruism. So compassion is in between loving kindness and altruism. So in order to be really altruistic, therefore effectively to actually help someone, one needs compassion. So compassion, as you know, you may have heard many times, is the wish others to be free from suffering. A real sincere wish, you know, others to be free from suffering. And so, in order not to become just a pity, which is most of our compassion, in order not just to be a pity, you know, like when we watch the news and we see, when we watch the news and we see the suffering, you know, in this world. But then when you go back to, you want to be a millionaire, maybe, I don't know, you switch to our channel, and we forget. So we forget the suffering. The moment we switch channel, or the moment the news are over, and we're watching something else, the suffering is forgotten. Why? Because we are not really related to that person. We don't really know them. It's not like our brother, our sister, our mother. So that's why loving kindness must precede compassion. Because through loving kindness, one makes oneself close. With loving kindness, we become close to everyone, like brother and sister. Or in this particular tradition, this particular lineage, the tradition of mother becomes our mother. So the mother is just an example, because in general, the mother is the one we feel more close to, isn't it? So we feel very close to our mother, particularly we Italians. I will be tomorrow, today, so, before we choose the mother, in the Christian tradition you have all brothers and sisters. The way Mother Teresa, when they ask her, how could you deal with the misery, how can you deal with the misery of Calcutta, sick when she used to go around, in the street of Calcutta, picking up of destitute and sick. How could you not feel repulsion, when you see certain conditions? She said, well, what I see, all the children of God. They're all God's children. Therefore, they're all my brother and sister. So it makes sense. So he saw everyone as her brother and sister. So she was, that's love. She could, on the basis of that, she could have love for them, so eventually compassion, and take them to the clinic or wherever, to the hospital. So seeing them as brother and sister allowed her to generate love. So brother and sister, the form. Yes. And then, on top of that, compassion. So the very reason why the mother, that's why the love is like the mother for the child. The mother, in general, is first has love, and then concern. The concern that the mother has always for the child is always based on love. That's why she's always worried. How is the child? That's why I'm sick. Always wishing, our mother is always wishing us to be free from suffering, but there's a difficulty we are facing based on love. To feel close, again, we don't just feel, to feel close there must be a reason. There must be, a reason to feel close to. And we feel close to whom? To people who are beneficial to us. Those who benefit us, we feel close. Those who harm us, we feel distant. Distant towards all those harm us and close to those who benefit us. And again, the person who benefits most is our mother. And so going backwards, in this sixfold is one effect. One is close to the mother because one understands the kindness. Understand the kindness, so one wishes to repay the kindness. So one wishes to repay the kindness, but of course, in this particular lineage, so we have the mother, therefore. So the six causes in one effect, one is to recognize everyone as mother, that they all have been kind to us, they wish to repay the kindness, so loving kindness, then loving kindness, compassion, the superior thought, and then bodhicitta. But here, the practice of, before the practice starts in this particular tradition, the practice starts with equanimity. So everyone is our mother. Every one of us is our mother. Since we all exist since the beginning of time, therefore Buddhism teaches that there is the possibility that all living beings has been our mother, not just one time, but many, many times. So, but in order to really feel that, so one first is to make one's mind balanced. So whenever we see, the way we relate to each other is in terms of friends, enemy, and strangers. Therefore, it's very difficult to see everyone as mother. So first we have to balance. First we have to see how Friend, enemy, strangers is very uncertain. It is a concept. It depends. Enemy can easily become friend, friend can easily become enemy, stranger can easily become a friend as well as an enemy, and so forth. In reality, so what we all want is happiness. So what we don't wish is suffering. So from this point of view, we are all same. There's no real difference. The wish to be happy, particularly this, the wish to be happy. So whether it is George Bush or whether it is Osama Bin Laden, the wish, the means is different. The use to be happy, but simply the wish to be happy, that feeling to be happy is same. Yeah. So there is no difference. So on based on that, then one contemplate the fact, or one think about how all living beings, many living beings that they may have been, you know, they've been our mother in the past. But of course, this is up to the individual to accept. This is up to the individual to think about, to realize it, to accept, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So first, eventually, of course, one is to accept past lives, past and future lives. But anyway, that is the method. So, for the method is, on the basis of equanimity, one generate, one look at, everyone has one mother, as one's mother. The mother being kind to us, to repay the kindness, loving kindness, compassion, like that, and the superior thought. So having generated this superior thought, eventually, at a certain point, eventually, when one sees that all living beings that have been very kind to us are actually suffering, the thought of I myself, the thought of myself, because the responsibility to liberate everyone, first one generates this thought, no matter what, just myself alone will liberate everyone from suffering. But eventually, when you think how, eventually, you know, when one comes down and you really think about, sees, you know, you realize that one doesn't, at this present moment, one does not have the ability to do that. And of course, as a Buddhist, you know, when one think about who could, you know, who can really effectively, you know, liberate, alleviate the suffering of everyone, liberate of everyone, completely, that is Buddha. That is enlightenment, that is Buddha. So eventually, the person will generate the thought. Therefore, may achieve that state, you know, the bodhicitta mind. The seventh, which is the result, may achieve, you know, that state, perfect enlightenment, to really, effectively, you know, towards everyone. So, but the other, so this is one way. And this is said to be easier. And we can see why it's easier. Because it is a cause and effect relationship. You know, in this method, six causes and one effect. So the other method, which is the method particularly common to, popular in the Kadampa teachings, and the method from where all the mind training, you know, comes from. So, is the method of equalizing and exchanging oneself for others. The method of, you know, Shantideva. So this method of generating bodhicitta, yes, is very interesting. So this method is very straightforward. The method that was taught by the Kadampa in the mind training tradition, which is the teaching that the Rinpoche is going to give. Yeah? Which is the teaching that the Rinpoche is going to give. It is extremely straightforward. It is difficult. It is said to be for sharp faculty practitioner. The other one was for dull faculty practitioner. Maybe we don't fit either. Or maybe we do. So the so-called sharp faculty practitioner, he takes the bull by the horn. Yeah? He takes the bull by the horn. Something like that. Because, they say, with this method, one goes straight, you know, one goes straight into the cause of suffering, goes straight into the origin of the very cause of suffering, in accordance, you know, to the mind train tradition, to the Kadampa tradition, that is the self-cherishing mind. The self-cherishing mind, the real cause, of course, the ultimate cause of our suffering is the misconception of a self. Is the ignorance that misconceives the I, the self. That is the real cause, the real origin of all suffering. But based on that, you know, based on the misconception of a self, as if there is a real I, self, you know, an agent. So, based on this, you know, we get a strong sense of me. Based on this, we get a very strong sense of I, me. So me first. So, and in accordance to this tradition, the suffering, that selfishness, you know, is a real cause of suffering. Interesting thing is selfishness here is that it's not, we are not talking about selfishness in the sense that you are not able or you don't want to share your bread or your salary or whatever. It's not the inability or no wishing to share the wealth. That too is selfish. But here, in this tradition, one can really see selfishness, particularly when we suffer. So when we suffer, when we are sick, when we have a problem, that is the time that we can see how selfish we are. Because that is the time when we can see that how self-centered we are. When we suffer, when we are sick, when we experience problems, you know, there is, due to this sense, strong sense of me, so no matter how small the problem, it amplifies. So it's not really the problem that makes us suffering, but it is the concept of my problem, is me. And so it is very clear that whatever, when we suffer, when we experience a problem, we are sick, it feels as if you are the only person experiencing it. As if all the human, as if everybody else left, went to the moon, maybe, and left us alone. And so, that's why we can't understand the way to say, why me? No? If you are unemployed, it feels as if you are the only person unemployed. We know we are not, but it feels as if we are the only person unemployed. And, well, if you are sick, even though we know that other people sick, it feels as if you are the only person sick. And that's why when we hear, oh, that person too is sick, we feel better. So when we hear that many people too, many people are sick like us, we feel better. Because we don't feel anymore alone. So that's what that's what self-centered mind does. It makes us feel alone. And so, it's not that we are really alone when everybody left. We just become huge. So we become very, very tall. And as we are tall, we look, we don't see anybody. It looks like as if everybody left, but there's the reality we are there, below. But we became very tall, so we cannot see others. So we feel like that. And that is selfishness. So it amplifies, you know, it amplifies the suffering, it amplifies the problem, it amplifies the sickness. You can use, you know, when you look at, you know, the selfish mind, like when you look at, for example, look at the depression. You know, depression is a very clear example, a very clear sign of selfishness. When the person is depressed, you know, everything is shut, everything is closed, you cannot talk to the person. You know? Everything is extremely, when you feel down, you know, they're depressed, nobody can talk to us. You feel extremely self-centered. Of course, it's not something that you are going to tell to the person who is depressed that you are selfish, but that will make it more difficult. You know, that is not that is not a problem anymore. Mm-hmm. But eventually, when one is out of depression, when one is fine, one should point out how selfish one is. Mm-hmm. Maybe remind us how selfish we are. Mm-hmm. Selfishness is a very depression is the cream of selfishness. The essence. So how we get there? That is a different method, you know? But the feeling, you know, what we feel, is very much like that. And so in this tradition, therefore, since selfishness is the cause of all our problems, it amplifies, it makes the problems huge. So therefore, they teach how to divert, a method how to divert the attention from me to others. So therefore, this altruism. Here it is taught altruism as a therapy, as a psychological method, as a therapy. That's why Zonj Dalame says, if you really want to be selfish, be big selfish. Big selfish is as Lama Yeshe used to emphasize all the time, when you totally dedicate to others, that is the time when you are happy. Well, that's what you do all the time. The real happiness and the more clever way to look after oneself is by looking after others. Because by looking after others, one get rid of this sense of me. It doesn't mean that one neglects oneself at all. It doesn't mean that one neglects oneself, but rather one get rid of this sense of me, I, first. So altruism does that. So we can look, and the interesting thing is, as well as the Lama particularly, Madhuras, they teach it not from a religious point of view. We should really look at like loving kindness, compassion, altruism, bodhicitta, not in a religious sense. Of course, it is taught within Buddhist religion, but it is a mind thing, it's a mental thing, it's mind, so it's a quality. It is a therapy. We can look at it as a therapy. So dedicating oneself to others. Looking at the therapy. And if we see that why the sincere person, the person who is sincere, dedicated to others, why is always happy? Because he never think about me. Of course, he still drink, he still eat, he still go to the movie, whatever. So he doesn't neglect, he does not neglect oneself, but the thought, the mind is always dedicated to others, thinking about others. Therefore, whatever problem one experiences, it becomes very small. The practice of, in this tradition, the practice of dedicating oneself for others is the real source, the real source of happiness. And so, and the opposite of altruism is selfishness. So in this selfishness, how does one look at others? So this is still in the context of bodhicitta, how to generate bodhicitta. So the wish to liberate others. One look at others in two ways. One look at how others are always kind to us, whether they harm us or whether they benefit us. In that tradition, the six causes one effect, one always looking at the benefit. The mother, the kindness, repay the kindness is the benefit if we look. Always the benefit. But in this tradition, of lineage, whatever we call, of equalizing and exchanging oneself for others, one look at the kindness of others, even if they harm us. Or particularly if the armas. That's what is so is complete. So all living beings, maybe I don't know about parts of ground, but if we get there, maybe parts of ground, but Rinpoche will explain You know, this is the very core, you know, the very heart of the mind training Kadampa teachings. People are kind to us, all, you know, whether they harm us or whether they benefit us. Whether they harm us, in what sense they are kind to us? As the Shantideva said in the Bodhisattva Charyavatara, he says, that the enemy is not an obstacle for you to practice patience. In the same way, like a beggar is not an obstacle for you to practice generosity, or the abbot is not an obstacle for you to receive the ordination. I mean, that is clear. The beggar is not an obstacle to us to practice patience. He is the person upon whom we practice generosity. So, and the abbot is the person upon whom we are ordained. And so the enemy is the person upon whom we practice patience. There is no other. We cannot practice patience with our friend, except when he becomes our enemy. So therefore, here we once see the kindness of others. So the enemy is kind to us. The person who harms us is kind to us. No, it's really kind. Because the practice of patience, as we've seen this morning in the meditation, is extremely important. The patience is the real source of peace. There are many levels of peace. There are many methods. The peace that comes from ethics, the peace that comes from wisdom. So there is the peace that comes from many different practices of life. And so we can talk also the peace that comes from patience. So the patience, which means the patience is the mind that is disturbed by pain. That is not the definition of patience. The mind that is undisturbed by pain, by suffering, that is patience. And how do we train? I know that we are born with that, we are not blessed, we have to train in no other way. And so the best person to train is the enemy. You know, the person who harms us, there is no other way. But of course, it's not that we actually train with the enemy. The enemy is there to test. Through reasoning, we become patient. As Shantideva explained beautifully, you know, in the sixth chapter of Bodhisattva, he gives many reasons why there is no need to strike back, why there is no need to be angry. And so when the mind becomes strong, to reasoning, then we need an enemy to test how tough is the armor. Without the enemy, we don't know how patient we are. So it's not that we train our patience with enemy. Yeah? If you don't test patience, better to be away from the enemy, isn't it? But it is once we are trained, you know, in meditation, you know, in a cave, whatever, through reasoning, away from the enemy, you know, once we are trained to reason away from the person who harm us, then when we feel, you know, that we may be ready, you know, or in the process of that, of course, we still encounter, you know, people harm us, but it is really when we have developed, you know, to reason that strong mind, the mind that is strong, then the enemy is there to help. You know, if the enemy is there to test how patient we are, so that's why the kindness. No, because our friend we cannot test our patient friend. So we do need the enemy. So therefore, the enemy is like they say, Shantideva is like your guru. He becomes your teacher, your guru, because you can only know how patient we are in terms of an enemy. And of course, then in the mind training teaching, they teach how to generate the quality of patience. With inanimate, with regard to problems, sickness, and so forth, which is the cause of, you know, becoming impatient, irritated, angry. So we not only become irritated or angry with anyone, we become also irritated and angry with the inanimate, with the wind, with the dogs, you know, with the sun. We become angry with many things, with our sickness when it becomes sick, with the problems. For one thing, you know, in this method of equalizing and exchange of oneself for others, so we look at the benefit of how all living beings have been beneficial to us, including those who harm us. So, which is very difficult to understand how, you know, those who harm us are beneficial to us. But if we really think, it's very easy. We don't know if it can actually apply this method or different method. And so then we regard, so there are those who benefit us. So those who benefit us with regard to enemy, and then there are those who benefit us with regard to whatever we use. Everything that we use, the venue, this place, our room, the food, the clothes, everything is based on the kindness of others. So we take it for granted. It is, you know, it is very difficult, you know, to recognize how, I mean, it is very difficult to recognize how others are very kind to us with regard to those who provide food, who provide clothes. It's difficult because we say we think we pay them. They are not doing really for us. They are doing for profit, isn't it? We think, you know, they are not really kind to us. They just want to make money. You know, they are not making the bread for me. You know, they are not making the clothes for me. They are not building the house for me. Of course, they may use it, but it's not really for me, for them to make money. But if we look, you know, the benefit, you know, as we take it for granted, if we imagine that we are starving, you know, imagine that we are somewhere, maybe in the desert, with plenty of money, we just get lost, trekking somewhere, get lost, plenty of money, we are starving. Then someone comes along, lots of bread, you know, warm panini, warm, you know, and maybe with some cheese and salami inside, which is something which I had in the apartment. Let's say one is starving, and someone comes there. And he sees you are there starving, hungry, and he says, you know, here is some bread. You want some bread? You say, yes, I'm starving. $5. Yeah, $5. And so, you pay the $5 and you get the bread. So now, do you think, is that person kind to you? He's asking the money. It's not that he's not giving the bread. He's asking, you say, unless you give me $5, I don't give you the bread. Okay? So this person, he say that, if you don't give me $5, I don't give you the bread. So you are starving. If you give him $5 and he gives you the bread, is that person kind to you? You are starving. Is the person kind to us? And see if we find ourselves? Yes, yeah? But not only $5, we can pay $100. You know? We can give not just $5, but $100. So we see how kind he is, even if he asks for money. We see the kindness he made, thanks to him or her, we are alive, we can survive. Even if we pay $1 million for 1 kilo of bread,